Now, the Touchstone's theme for July is freedom and responsibility. And last week, we had a wonderful service addressing the issue of freedom and responsibility. It has been said that our seven principles expand in a series of ever-widening circles, beginning with the individual and moving outward to encompass the interdependent web of all existence. As our fourth principle, we affirm and promote a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. This is the center point or fulcrum of the seven principles. And this principle places at the center of all our religious activity a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Freedom and responsibility must go together. One of the invitations of Unitarian Universalism is the ongoing search for truth. We pursue the truth with the understanding that revelation is not sealed but continuous, and that meaning has not been captured in any final or finite way. Unitarian Universalist theologian James Luther Adam said that we are fated to be free. We are faced with endless choices, decisions large and small. And the free and responsible search does not always mean easy answers, as Dylan's Life in Music will attest. How we use our freedom determines the quality of our life and the world around us. The question is, what will you use your freedom for? And I think this question can be applied to Bob Dylan as we consider his music and his spiritual journey through life. To quote Dylan, I think of a hero as someone who understands the degree of responsibility that comes with freedom. Freedom and responsibility, the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. I would suggest that Bob Dylan has been engaged in that search throughout his life. This morning, I'll look mainly at the first two decades of his career. I followed his music closely during that period, but then mostly ignored him after his evangelical Christian album, Slow Train Coming, that came out in 1979. When Dylan was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature in 2016, I was surprised. But as I began to think about it, I realized how well deserved it was. He's written and performed powerful and literate songs ever since the 1960s, and many of them have often been performed by other artists. He has drawn material from life, from literature, from mythology, from scriptures, and from very many musical traditions. His songs deal with social justice, morality, relationships. And through all of this has been the theme of his search for truth and meaning, often reinventing himself along the way. And Dylan has never been easy to pin down, and his life has been a continual evolution of influences, images, and personas. In his 2011 book, Bob Dylan in America, Sean Wilence wrote, "For more than half a century, Bob Dylan has been absorbing, transmuting, and renewing and improving American art forms long thought to be trapped in formal conventions. He not only put folk in bed with rock, he took traditional folk music, the blues, rock and roll, country and western, black gospel, Tin Pan Alley, Tex-Mex borderland music, Irish outlaw ballads, and more, and bent them to his own poetic muse." And this changing persona, David Dalton, in his book, Who Is That Man in Search of the Real Bob Dylan, published in 2012, wrote, "The public and private Dylans, his music, his times, and our perceptions of him are inextricably linked, a sort of zeitgeist kid. We experience His many shape-shifting personas, Dust Bowl singer, street urchin, son of Ramblin' Jack Elliott, folk messiah, neon Rambo, Old Testament prophet, Amish farmer, howdy neighbor country boy, white-faced death's head mummer, Shropshire lad with flowers in his hat, Christ-like Bob, born-again Bob, Hasidic Bob, late Elvis Dylan, endless tour Dylan, Jack Fate, living national treasure, and so on. Gives a bit of a sense. And Dylan often thought that the music, the songs, came to him. In a 1962 Sing Out magazine cover story, he said, "The songs are there. They exist all by themselves, just waiting for someone to write them down. I just put them down on paper," he said. "If I didn't do it, someone else would." And in Howard Soane's, in his biography, he says, "This was not false modesty for the purpose of publication. It was the way he talked in private with friends. And it remained his philosophy throughout his career, an unchanging belief that was in many ways a kind of faith. He clearly felt that songs came to him from some other place, and over the years, he would come to believe that the songs were actually given to him by God." Now, putting together this service has turned out to be much more than I anticipated. And I realize how much my own life has been affected by his music. Robert Zimmerman was born into a Jewish family in 1941 in Duluth, Minnesota, and spent most of his childhood and youth in the Iron Range town of Hibbing. His father instilled a strict moral code in his eldest son and sent him to study with a rabbi for his bar mitzvah. In 1959, he moved to Minneapolis, ostensibly to attend university, but mainly to explore music, especially the folk tradition. I want to share one anecdote from Howard Soane's biography about his time in Minneapolis. It's in 1960. It was there that he met Dave Morton and Dave Whitaker, who had been high school friends, and he writes, "They had also been members of the radical group Unitarian Youth." couldn't resist that. In 1961, Bob Dylan moved to New York, imbued with ambition and a connection to folk tradition, especially Woody Guthrie. Between 1962 and 1966, he would produce seven albums that are among the most important music of the 20th century, exploring universal themes and spiritual exploration. Now, his self-titled debut album in 1962 was almost all reworkings of old songs, but in 1963, the freewheeling Bob Dylan not only had Blowing in the Wind, which we heard, but Masters of War and A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. Then in 1964 came The Times They Are Changing and another side of Bob Dylan. Songs like With God on Our Side, Only a Pawn in Their Game, When the Ship Comes In, and The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll. And there were songs like To Ramona, which contains lines such as, "You are better than no one, and no one is better than you. If you really believe that, you have nothing to win and nothing to lose." Or then his song, My Back Pages. "A self-ordained professor's tongue, too serious to fool, spouted out the liberty is just equality in school. I spoke the word, equality, I spoke the word as if a wedding vow. Ah, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Or his song, One Too Many Mornings, which has a line, you are right from your side, and I am right from mine. All of these little gems are sort of nuggets that have remained with me for a very long time. And then the song Chimes of Freedom, with its hints of the Sermon on the Mount, William Blake, Shakespeare, Arthur Rimbaud. Other songs from that period include things like Love Minus Zero, No Limit. And I'm quoting a few lines from his work just to give you a sense of what it was like. In the dime stores, stores and bus stations, people talk of situations, read books, repeat quotations, draw conclusions on the wall. Some speak of the future. My love, she speaks softly. She knows there's no success like failure, and that failure's no success at all. Or the song, It's All Right, Ma, I'm Only Bleeding, with its line, he not busy born is being born is busy dying. He not busy being born is busy dying. Or, although masters make the rules for the wise men and the fools, I got nothing, Ma, to live up to. Now his next album, Highway 61 Revisited, was next. And it really affected me with songs like Desolation Row. It's one of my favorite Dylan songs. At 11 minutes long, it's, again, not something we can do today. Or Like a Rolling Stone, with the line, when you got nothing to lose. You're invisible now, you got no secrets to conceal. I think that one was particularly relevant to me in my coming to terms with being a gay man. Now, the first line of the title song of that album has explicit Old Testament reference and a family reference, likely, as Bob's father's name was Abraham. And that song leads me to looking at Dylan's life and music. I see the coincidences and connections to my own life. Because some 300 kilometers up Highway 61, I was born in Port Arthur in 1942. Now, of course, at the time, Bob Dylan didn't mean anything to me. But by 1965, as a student at the University of Toronto, I was already familiar with the songs that we've mentioned, and they were already having an impact on my own sense of who I was and what my place in the world should be. So his music definitely impacted me through the years. In fact, I did keep journals and did scribbling from time to time, and there's one little series of lines from the winter of 1970 and 71. Toronto, winter, cold, damp, Macmillan's stockroom at 150 an hour. Bob Dylan reviews the symptoms and mythology of the malaise, while Ginsberg takes flight in pursuit of the demons. Visions of getting back to the garden, or is it Desolation Row? Lao Tzu offers sage advice, and everybody must get stoned, says Dylan. So, in those few lines, I managed to not only get Allen Ginsberg and Lao Tzu in, but also three Dylan songs, Gates of Eden, Desolation Row, and Rainy Day Women, 12 and 35. So, many of the Dylan songs and lines from them have become embedded in my own consciousness. Now, in 1966, his double album, Blonde on Blonde, includes songs like Absolutely Sweet Marie, which has the line, to live outside the law, you must be honest. And Then his song, "Most Likely You'll Go Your Way and I'll Go Mine," seemed to foreshadow his 1966 motorcycle accident, which gave him a chance to retreat and reinvent himself. In the earlier years, he had been taken on by the folk protest movement and seen, as I said earlier, the folk messiah. This was not something he was willing to be stuck in, and so this motorcycle accident gave him the chance to step away. But the following year, in 1960, well, there we are. Coincidence? In 1967, he came out with the album John Wesley Harding. And David Dalton, mentioned earlier, writes, "When Dylan emerges, on vinyl at least, from his retreat, it is as the grim figure of an Old Testament prophet who speaks in riddles that are now parables, the images stripped bare." From 1969 to 1975, Dylan did not tour, but he did produce 10 very diverse albums, which covered a range of different areas. The albums Blood on the Tracks and Desire dealt a lot with his relationship with his wife Sarah, and in retrospect, seemed to suggest the breakup that would occur in 1977. The album Desire also includes Hurricane, a social justice song that helped free boxer Reuben Carter from a wrongful murder conviction. Now, following Dylan's divorce from Sarah Lowndes in 1977, he developed relationships with several black backup singers, one of whom may have helped to lead to his Christian conversion experience. Sean Weilitz again writes, "Dylan had entered his Christian phase in 1979 when he experienced what he called a profound spiritual awakening in Jesus Christ with the Vineyard Christian Fellowship in California." He goes on to say, "The apocalyptic theme in Dylan's early songs appeared chiefly as metaphors of social redemption, depicting the revolutionary moment when the oppressors would be undone and the oppressed would take their place. Now, the theme appeared as foretold by the prophets of the Old Testament, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel, and as described by St. John in Revelations. Earth's ruin in the great tribulation, which would bring Satan's destruction and engulf unbelievers in eternal fire, while the paradise of the New Jerusalem opened to the Christ's saints and servants. Faith was the only way to redemption, and there was nothing metaphorical about it." His fans found this Christian Bob phase unfathomable, but it wasn't totally unexpected. Although he'd never behaved in so literal a manner before, he'd always been on a quest for mystical deliverance. In some ways, his embrace of Christianity was a transcendent extension of his envision of the outsider as saint, with Christ as the champion of the downtrodden, the outcast, and the lost. So in this period, from 1979 to 1981, he produced 3 albums and went on gospel tours during the period with powerful performances, but extolling this fundamentalist vision of how to be saved. The albums were Slow Train Coming, Saved, and Shot of Love. And I have to say that it was the Slow Train Coming album with a song like Gotta Serve Somebody that actually at that time turned me really very literal Christian approach that he took turned me off, and that was the point at which I actually abandoned my following of Bob Dylan. And it was only many years later, thanks to my partner Brian, that I heard the song Every Grain of Sand, which is the last song on Shot of Love. Now, it had signaled a move away from the strident nature of the Christian albums, and there's a link in it to William Blake's lines in Auguries of Innocence, to see a world in a grain of sand and heaven in a wildflower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour. Now, Sheryl Crow, another musician, has said, "Every Grain of Sand was the first religious song I'd heard which transcended all religions." And I'm going to play that song in its entirety. And this performance is by a woman named Lucy Kaplansky. And just before I put it on, I will say that I have printed out about 10 copies of the lyrics to Every Grain of Sand, so if anybody's unable to really hear them thoroughly, that they will be available here. In later years, Dylan moved away from the explicit fundamentalist Christian material, but he continues to explore theological themes. During a 1996 interview for Newsweek, Dylan said, when he was asked what he believed, Dylan said, "I find the religiosity and philosophy in the music. I don't find it anywhere else. Songs like Let Me Rest on a Peaceful Mountain or I Saw the Light, that's my religion. I don't adhere to rabbis, preachers, evangelists, all of that. I've learned more from the songs than I've learned from any of that kind of entity. The songs are my lexicon. I believe the songs." So today, I've not touched much on his many songs that deal with relationships. I mean, that could be another entire service. In fact, the more I thought about this, I thought there could be a whole series of talks dealing with Dylan. I've also really not, except recently, explored his music from that Christian period onward. But he is, as Dylan has aged, his voice has become even raspier than it was at the beginning, and sometimes hard to listen to. He's continued to produce many recordings, and touring has become his life in what has often been called the never-ending tour. The recent Martin Scorsese film about the 1975 Rolling Thunder Review ends with a list of tour stops, a huge number each year that continue right to the present. It seems that for Dylan, writing and performing his music is his life. So having touched briefly on a small bit of Dylan's life and music, it's clear that there is much to explore. I continue to find his music thought-provoking, inspiring, irritating, soothing, and worthy of the Nobel Prize. I think his life and music have been a very strong example of the free and responsible search for truth and meaning.